I'm from New Jersey, and you know we you know public school education, and you know they're and we swear a lot in New Jersey. So I you know I'm still getting back into the practice of speaking in a public forum. So I'll try to clean it up. But I see Big Mac is in the office in the audience. So I really don't have a low bar in this case. I did check these slides. So why, part one, why aren't things getting better? You know, in the 50s, there are these predictions that, you know, 50 years from now, we'll have a 20-hour work week and moving sidewalks. And instead, we're working 60-hour work weeks, and half of my friends are unemployed. And we don't have flying cars, which is, oh, there's the first swear word. Okay. So things, you know, things aren't getting better. This is the 19th LISA conference. So let's compare 20 years ago versus today. 20 years ago, you could think of all the different sites that were represented by this conference as, you know, we had a couple good ones sort of up at the top of the pyramid, and we had a lot of bad ones down at the base. And you might say that the creation of this conference was, hey, we'll get the people at the good sites to write a lot of papers and do workshops and tutorials, and they'll educate the people at the bottom, and we'll make the world a better place. And that's a great idea. So where are we, you know, now, today? What the hell happened? So instead, we just made the triangle bigger. What happened in these last 20 years? Well, we never really expected the explosive growth of desktop PCs and offices, the internet, all these different things. It could have gone other ways, really. I mean, we could have had equal amounts of the, you know, good, middle, and bad categories. Optimally, we would have had lots and lots of good sites and then, you know, a couple stragglers. Realistically, a bell curve would have been nice. But so how did this happen? Well, and why is talking about small sites important? It's because small sites grow up to be big sites. And also, the more big sites that I visit, the more I realize that, okay, there's one or two sites out there where big sites, you know, act as a, you know, like a symphony with a conductor and everything just happens. But most of the big sites I go to, really, it's just a federation of small sites. So everything we learn from small sites, you know, we've met the enemy, and he, and what did Pogo say? He is me. He is us. So how did that happen? Lots of new small sites without big IT teams, sort of my theory. You know, if you have a small site with, you know, the PC guy and 12 users, you're not going to have the big fancy infrastructure. What exactly is broken? As I go to small sites, I see, I always say the same thing to myself, wow, they're really missing the fundamentals. And then I think, gee, I should make a list of what those fundamentals are. And I'm not sure what they are. So we're, that's a problem. Just some background. I've been at a lot of big sites and small sites. You know, companies that had DBAs but no IT. You know, database administrators trying to, you know, who in their part time might, you know, load a PC now and then, you know, load the operating system, or usually stick with whatever operating system the vendor shipped with them, and that, you know, 5 years, 6 years later, it's still running that one. There was, do some, you know, web searches for the AT&T wireless CRM disaster. Their botched upgrade of their CRM solution, which spanned more than 2 years, practically put that company out of business. And in fact, when they merged with whoever bought them, it was, I've talked with people at this company, and off the record, they say, well, yeah, it was sort of a merger. You know, we exported our customer database to, you know, a comma-separated file and handed it to them, and that's what AT&T Wireless is now. Security, oh, and I'm always seeing security teams with responsibility with but no authority. I saw two big sites. At one of my jobs, I was interfacing with a lot of customers. So that's when I got to see a lot of different big sites and small sites. I saw two different sites with this ARP problem. There's a lot of ATM switches have this problem where if you if a software package goes out of control and starts pinging for every possible IP address, the ARP cache gets filled up. And one of these two sites was a hospital, with medical equipment plugged into their network, which they were fixing by rebooting this ATM switch every time the problem happened. Really scary things. And talk about getting the fundamentals wrong. Friends of mine at insurance companies that it takes 2 months after their start date before they have a PC. And this is a software developer, not maybe someone who could go without a PC. In my conversations with people, I've heard a lot of talk about best practices. Oh, and I have this book that talks a lot about best practices. And I sort of adopted, I think from Adam, the parable of the electrician versus the electric engineer. Or not parable, but just an analogy. Maybe this is a good analogy for system administrator. If you've ever done, who here has had a home project, home construction project where you had contractors and subcontractors? Okay, good. So you know what it's like. A construction project stops rather than not doing something to code. Right? I mean, that's generally how things go. Sort of. But, right, or when they leave, you do that part of the project. I'm from New Jersey, so you just get, cash at the ATM. But in system administration, it's not like that, right? The exchange service is supposed to be done by tomorrow, and you don't have the right component, so your boss says, well, what are you going to do? And you say, well, if I string this serial cable through the roof and to the next building and run this protocol, I can kludge it, and that'll be good. And the boss says, oh, good, that'll make our deadline done. And then you're stuck with this design decision because there's nothing more permanent than a temporary solution. So what's missing in this is the inspector. If you think about it, there's no one that comes through at the end of a computer deployment and says, okay, now before you can let the users on, the housing inspector has to come through and certify the place. Now, I've heard, I've gotten different reactions from this. A good reaction I got was, well, actually, the SEC sort of had an inspector for the whole Y2K problem, that companies were required to, publish, what they're doing in Y2K and all that kind of thing. Also, there is the National Electrical Code, which is a non-governmental body that sets standards for, construction codes. Is it a good idea to have the equivalent for system administration? I don't know, but I know it works in one place, maybe it'll work in another. I'm not here to say that, I'm starting a new project to develop a code or anything like that. But we do have best practices. We have vendor best practices. Sun has them. Not many people listen to them. What's my animation doing? Microsoft has them and is fascist about them. If you look at what is on the Microsoft certifications, it's 90% of it is a test to see whether or not you know what's in the best practices, almost more so than do you know what button to click on here or there. And if you call Microsoft support and it's obvious that you've done an installation that isn't conformant to their best practice recommendations, they don't talk to you. So it's sort of like being told, sorry, buddy, construction has to stop until we fix this code violation. Sage has a number of short topic booklets that do best practices. There's some good resources there, and some great tutorials here at this conference. Often what people call the soft topics are really best practices. So we have best practices. There's just a little in this corner, a little in this corner, but we don't have them all in one place. We have this book, and we have the Sysman Body of Knowledge, and Rob's project. There's a great paper a number of years ago. What? Carol Kubicki from Motorola, I believe, who took the capability maturity model for from CMU, and no, SR, whatever. I think CMU, and SIU, and applied it to system administration. I like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is what psychologists and sociologists talk about. That is, your basic fundamental needs are physiological. You need to eat, and then after that, you have safety. So if you wonder why does, if a billionaire is saying, "Oh, my new yacht, has a dent," and why would a person who is homeless not care about this? That's explained right there in this, because if your basic needs aren't being met, further needs aren't being met. So when I think about system administration, sometimes I try to apply this to my users. The premise is, in a really screwed up network environment, what users are concerned with is, can I get my job done now? Have you ever had a user say, "I don't care about this outage that you're dealing with. I don't care about the big problem. I just need to get this one document printed so it can get in the FedEx envelope by 5. So that's your base level one. If you have some stability for the current project, then people are wondering about, can I always get my job done? A little more stability, and the question is, do your users feel that they can get their job done in the future? That's sort of confidence in system administration. I've often had users who say, well, our network's sort of crappy, but we know that when we really need to get things done, they can get done. Or, we have these problems and we can't really plan our projects because the network is so unreliable. And then the top level is self-sufficiency. Is my network designed in a way that is so superior that I can self-manage, improve my stuff without help? If you've noticed, a lot of this talk is just sort of random thoughts that I've been having, but I have 90 minutes, so. And a captive audience. Well, the door's unlocked. Is it still unlocked? Okay. Part 3, lessons from building a small site. Okay, now I've gone through all the intro material. Let's talk about something that has to do with the title of the talk. So after working at a number of large sites earlier in my career, and then a small site starting in 2001, in 2004, I joined a very small site. Well, it's small and it's large. It's small in that it was small on technology, a very low-tech company, but it was sort of large in that it was 3 buildings, New Jersey, Maryland, and London. So it was larger than your small companies because it was international, but it was very low-tech. So maybe this talk should be titled, "What I Learned from Doing System Administration at a Low-Tech Company." When I arrived, there were huge amounts of problems. They had not had a director of IT for 6 months. I was handed a document that was, each part of the company, everyone in the leadership team had listed all of their IT projects or all the projects that they had for IT that they really wanted to see get done, the things that were on hold. And this ranged from the CTO being so concerned that you can go to their website as companyname.com or www.company.com, but not without the www, which is like, why? That's really an important issue to you? I mean, I understand it's important, but your mail server's crashing once a week. All through issues around their major, the process that makes them money, having crashes or not very good backups or whatever their various problems were. And so I needed to get the fundamentals right. Now, in this book that I wrote, co-wrote, The Practice of System Network Administration, each chapter is split into the basics of the topic and the icing. So you might say the basics of backups is get it working, get restores working, get things budgeted, and et cetera. But the icing is automation and lights out operation, that kind of thing. So I thought, no problem. I know what the basics are for 32 different topics. Or 33 different topics. All I have to do is go through the first half of each chapter of my own book, and it'll be so easy, right? But that list was hundreds of items. So just doing the basics was going to be way too much. Well, nothing crystallizes your priorities like being there, and being there when there are emergencies that were requiring me to hop on an airplane and fly to London because my remote hands weren't working. My remote hands didn't know how to use a command line. So in hindsight, well, sort of mid-sight, because about halfway through my career at this company, or my time at this company, I realized that what I was doing was going through a number of phases. Phase zero, and this is useful information for anyone joining a new company or a new organization, phase zero was really about learning who the players are, learning who the current emergencies were, and figuring out what the backlog of projects were. I mentioned this document before. I actually got, I think, three different versions of the document, and it was serious work just to merge them and group them. Then I started Think Coalesced, and I explained to the management team, said, we need to think about IT in a very different way. I sort of explained, there's the old world of IT and the new world IT, and I've decided that it's my job to bring you to the new world of IT. In the old world, we measure things based on mean time to repair. So you have a disk failure, and your email server's down, but 6 hours later, they've restored everything from tape, brought the server back up, and everyone cheers, yay, what a good job, you brought us back up. And that happens again, and say, yay, it took 6 hours last time, you did in 5 hours this time, you're improving. So you're based on, you have a failure, and we resolve it. I said, now in the new world of IT, we're going to try to measure things based on an SLA, a service level agreement. And we're going to decouple component failure from outage. So in the first example, in the old world, there's a one-to-one relationship between component failure and outage. But new world, you have a failure which may or may not turn into an outage. And only if it turns into an outage do you need to do resolution. Excuse me. So for example, I explained to the management team disk mirroring. And I said, in the next couple months, there will be some service time. But by the end of that, we will have all of our servers will have a mirrored boot disk so that a disk can die and not create an outage. And our networks are going to be changed so that there's some redundancy. Now, these sites were small enough that it wouldn't make sense to do the cool VRRP kind of stuff. But the redundancy in those areas could be a second DSL router for the New Jersey office in case the first one died, a second Linksys router for the Maryland office. But that's going to be a major improvement, and also actually. One of the things I did, is since I was working from New Jersey, my goal was to make sure there were two different paths to get into any building for remote maintenance. So usually I could SSH in, and I could go in through some proper VPN. In other words, so when I screwed up the VPN server, I could get in to fix it. So phase one, phase zero, acclimation. Phase one, basic stability. Major outages were a common occurrence. I needed to, as I said before, being there really crystallized my priorities. So while I would like to say that we need redundancy and backups and everything, to get basic stability, I just needed to make sure backups were working. Because that's my safety parachute. Try to replace the accident of history technology decisions they had made that were hurting reliability, and also just learning the purchasing process, which in small companies is shockingly difficult. You know, when I was working at Lucent, you know, I never had a vendor say, "Sure, we'll ship that as soon as the background, the credit check comes through." Maybe that was just my personal naivete. So here's some of the projects we did. On the network side, we're going to stop using PCs to as routers. The security side, install a firewall instead of, I won't tell you what they were doing. On servers, get the boot disk to mirror, because you know, if a server has a boot disk and a data disk, it's a totally different emergency if the boot disk dies, because I'm in this legacy environment where I don't know what software I have to restore, and I don't know if I could find the right disks to be able to restore it. So mirror the boot disk. The data disks, you know, we could deal with a backup, you know, tape backup or whatever we had. Actually, I started about once a week going to the local CompUSA to buy a FireWire or USB hard drive and just say, you know, screw it, I got to get this data backed up. You know, just as a temporary solution, I'm going to spend $300 on a, you know, 300 gig hard disk and just do a nightly mirror while I'm waiting to get something more serious up and running. For the users, it was very important to be visible, whether that was at the location. So I, visibility means different things in different situations. So for my remote sites, I actually did a tour of the remote sites and made sure that I visited them and spent a lot of time talking with different users and just being visible, sort of calming them down, learning about their needs. And email. Of all the applications that I needed to stabilize first, email was number one on my list. Can anyone guess why that might be? Most visible? It's true. It's the one application that everybody uses, but who's one person on that list of everybody? The CEO. It's in small companies, it's often the only application that the CEO uses, right? That and his telephone. So if I could make that stable, I'm going to please the person that's going to be signing these checks, which is a good lesson for big sites. How many people have a "we don't make house calls" policy in their IT group that gets thrown out the door when the CEO has a problem on his home machine? Yeah, you know why? Because he signs your paychecks. Of course, small sites have no documentation, which you know, is never a problem at big sites. Well, I didn't have time for a big solution, but you know, at phase one, we're doing stopgap measures because we're having you know crashes left and right, and it's crazy. No time for a big solution, so I just said, "Damn it! Version one of our document repository is going to be on my laptop. I'm going to have a subdirectory called IT. I'm just going to start making documents because I wouldn't want to put it on a wiki because I wouldn't be able to access the wiki until things are stabilized anyway." Another big part of documentation is labels on equipment. You know, we talk about documentation repositories, and those are very important, but boy, what a nice thing it is to finally have, you know, your servers labeled because of the history in a small company. You know, there was, you know, John the computer guy who was a part-timer who came in and just, you know, fixed things, and he knew that, you know, the third server down in the rack was the email server, and he was the only one that needed to know. But so I adopted this policy: if you touch it, you have to label it. This also led me to understand the skill level of the team I had inherited. When one of our junior admins, you know, I handed him the label maker that I brought and said, "Why don't you, you know, label one or two of the servers, and you know, ask me questions if you have any?" And he comes back to me 10 minutes later and says, "How do you operate this?" I said, "Okay, now I understand the level of the skill level that I'm dealing with." I didn't realize this until I was leaving the company 2 weeks ago that in my 2 years, I replaced everybody in the IT group. So, what are the the fundamental of the fundamental issues with physical issues. Wow, that was a great sentence. Let's say that differently. When dealing with physical issues, there are four things that I had to do. As I'm visiting each of these sites, every time I walk into, well, they didn't have computer rooms, but every time I walked into a computer closet, I thought to myself, you know, CPSW, power, you know, cooling, power, security, wiring. A lot of these computer closets didn't have cooling, and I found this great $400, you know, portable chiller in a catalog that was a good stopgap measure. Power is everything on a UPS. Security, are there physical locks? You know, are there cables coming out the computer closet door that prevent us from shutting the door? And wiring, is it organized or labeled? Do I need to spend time fixing a messy wiring situation? Actually, we were planning on moving some of the offices, so in most cases, I just said, we're not going to clean this up. We're going to label it, and we're going to wait till, you know, we'll clean it when we move. And a label printer in every pot. Desktops. So I go to the London office, and it's a big call center kind of situation. And there, the two IT staff that I did have there were completely overloaded. They weren't able to do any kind of server work because they were completely flooded by desktop PC support issues. Everything from virus scares wrecking two or three machines to Excel macros that needed touching up. And I guess I'll say that the management decision I made was to hire a full-time temp to do nothing but desktop support so that these two IT guys could be freed up for the server work that I was going to need them to do. And I'll tell you, well, this is being recorded, right? Okay. So it was a political challenge. And I had to learn that, I'm not going to go into it. It was a political challenge. But by identifying what is the time sink for my staff and somehow eliminating it, luckily I was able to hire a person, that let them do the things that I needed them to do. Management. So as also during this tour, as I was meeting a lot of my staff for the first time, I was identifying what are my staff skills. Can HR provide me a copy of their resume? If they're consultants, can I, you know, or just take them out to lunch and talk about, you know, so what did you work before this? What do you do? That kind of thing was very powerful. A lot of workflow improvement was very, very critical, and was critical to just be sitting with them. I think one of the things I did with the highest impact was spending a day in the London office just sitting there with the sysadmins, watching them, not doing any other work, and noticing their workflow issues that they hadn't noticed. For example, occasionally customer data would come in and it would be like a 3-megabyte file and there was a formatting problem, so they would read it into Notepad and fix the problem and save it out. Notepad crashes when you read a 3-megabyte file in, and they would sit there with the spinning dial waiting for it to finish, which it never was because it actually crashed. Buying them a copy of Ultra Edit for Windows let them edit 3-megabyte files, and they loaded in less than 30 seconds. You know, when Notepad can read a file that big, it takes like 2 minutes just to load it in. I had a big benefit from just sitting among them and learning their workflow. And that's sort of a management lesson that everyone can find valuable. The whole management by walking around thing really does work. And just other things that, problems I hadn't seen at big companies like patch cables. I discovered that part of the process for installing a new machine was to get a patch cable to plug it into the network. How do you get a patch cable? You go around the office scavenging for a patch cable that was left behind from the last PC to be removed. So it would take 20 minutes extra to install a PC for just to grab a cable. And I said, wait, you mean I could get you guys a significant performance increase if I just bought 50 patch cables? I could order that today. And they had this look on their face like I had just offered to buy them all brand new Ferraris. They're like, you could do that? Why, yes, I can. Wow, and the S appears. I'm super manager because I'm buying patch cables. So the lesson there is, you know, learn your staff's real problems. So we finally reached stability, and it was time for phase two. I could start thinking about actual IT apps. And it crystallized in me what are the most important fundamental apps that are needed in an IT environment. Your help desk needs some kind of request tracking tool, whether it's Remedy or Siebel or RT from Best. RT is an open source package from Best Practical. I always recommend it because, you know, it runs on any form of Unix, MySQL. You can be up and running in a very short amount of time. Excuse me. It's very customizable, but it comes with a default configuration that is the workflow that really works well for most IT shops. The other basic application is monitoring. If I can detect that a hard disk, that a server is down at 6 a.m. and my monitoring system tells me that it's down, if I can get it fixed before everyone starts coming into the office by 8, there was no outage. Right? If a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, it didn't make a noise, as far as I'm concerned. But I didn't take that philosophy class. Documentation. So I took this documentation repository called a subdirectory on my hard disk and threw all those documents into a wiki. Because I was dealing with this three-site problem, New Jersey, Maryland, and London, remote control was very important. So one of the things I did on this on my next tour through the buildings was installed some kind of KVM or remote KVM system for everything. So we had serial consoles, remote power, I could reboot, you know, power cycle a server remotely, and VNC. I had not used VNC much previously. I think it was the only system administrator in the world that hadn't used it. But boy, when you see that, everyone know what VNC is? It's a software, the server you run on a machine, and then you can connect to that machine and see exactly what's on its video display. So it's, you know, as you open Windows and stuff, it's sending deltas to your client. So it's relatively low bandwidth, but you're seeing actually what's on there. And, you know, on a Mac, at least, on a Mac server, the VNC server starts up early on in the boot process, so you could actually connect. And once the BIOS stuff has all happened and the kernel's loaded, you can actually watch the machine boot up. It's not as good as, say, a serial console, which, you know, like on a Sun, you can do everything from a serial console. But so anyway, next application, so to speak, is access to the machines that you have to work with, whether that's remote things or just having the key to the machine room door. And backups. I had all these catch-as-catch-can solutions for backups just because we're sort of in a panic trying to stabilize things, but now I could focus on an automated tape library, good, decent software, that kind of thing. And phase three was cleaning up. So now that, you know, I got things stable, then I could deploy the basic fundamental IT applications, I could start doing a lot of the other projects that were what IT should be doing. Participating in corporate projects, helping them optimize their workflow and being involved in new software releases, new initiatives. Finished the last 2% of those previously started projects. In other words, there was an overlap between my phase two and phase three. I could start writing policies. Policies are an important tool. If you don't have a policy that says the scope of what your IT workers do, you know, we support these applications, we don't support these applications, we don't do house calls or we do house calls. If you don't have that written down, your workers cannot say no. And then they're flooded with requests and they will be overloaded. They will be doing other people's jobs. So it's an important tool to have a lot of written policies. But you know, I didn't have anything to write them on, until I had a stable network. So that was in phase three. And then I could start planning the big vision ideas, like working on a global directory, more detailed written policies, like the security policy, which has to be a bigger document. Start writing job descriptions for everyone on my staff. Actually, everyone in the company had a written job description except the IT team. So they weren't getting good raises. They weren't having evaluations. It wasn't until phase three that I could actually get to the good people management stuff. Though if I had started a different point in the year, that stuff probably would have been done right away. And I'd like to say that phase four is growth, but that maybe next year's talk might be about that. But actually, phase four was outsource everything to India, and now I'm leaving and starting a new job. But what they're outsourcing has a damn good infrastructure, let me tell you. Now, with managing expectations was important on all levels of from the leadership team to the users. I adopted a policy of having at the 2-month point, I had a meeting with the entire leadership team where I was able to present my findings. I had visited all the sites and I had sort of a State of the Union address. This is, I've now surveyed everything. These are the problems. This was part of actually phase one acclimation. But I used this meeting to set expectations. I presented a very dire outlook of what was happening. I was able to quantify some of the stability issues. But I gave an optimistic outlook. My slide presentation ended with, this quote on a single slide, we're going to get through this, but it isn't going to be pretty or fun or inexpensive. And I ended with or inexpensive because I wanted the thing in their mind to be, they're about to start getting a lot of purchase order requests for all these different things, the remote power units and the backup server and the everything that I've listed. I also tried to develop a quick and dirty vision statement that would make sense to the leadership and I could use as a vehicle to explain all the expenses that they were then going to see. And so the vision statement that I presented to them was, a year from today, I want a world-class network that's reliable by design, has remote management for all services, is monitored for issues before they become outages, and with basic disaster recovery. Notice it's not world-class disaster recovery, it's just basic. With consistent desktop or desk-side support. Notice I'm not saying world-class desktop support. I made the point to them that we have chaos right now, and the big goal will be just to get things to be consistent. Where things are accessible, users know how to get help, and we have quality. The system administrators meet or exceed the SLA that I'm going to negotiate with management. So to summarize what I was saying before, with so many system administration topics, it can be difficult to determine what are the fundamentals. And being in sort of an emergency situation at a small company really helped me crystallize what are the top priorities of all the basics of system administration. And they were stop the hemorrhaging with basic infrastructure. Stabilize the network, the servers, get your physical stuff, your cooling and electric good. Email is the app that you need to stabilize because it's what your CEO uses. And be visible. Be visible to your leadership team, be visible to your users. And then once that happened, the 5 basic management apps. Request tracking, monitoring, documentation, remote control, and automated backups. I'm constantly surprised at how many IT teams that I visit, small companies and big, that don't have a good way of tracking user requests. That is more important than all the other applications. and then managing visibility both to management and to customers. And I highly recommend being honest and pessimistic. So in conclusion, I started with this 20 years ago versus today. Things, well, they're getting better, they're not getting better. They're getting better at the top, but the pyramid's growing. I believe I've identified some of the reasons. I don't think we get the fundamentals right, and I don't think we know what the fundamentals are. And I believe that's because we have a lack of best practices. Maybe we need some new models. Maybe we need to look at Maslow's hierarchy or CMM. Big sites can worry about many aspects of infrastructure because they have to, or they have history that has built up a big infrastructure. But small sites are forced to focus on the absolute most important priorities. And being at a small site crystallized for me what those are. We have plenty of time for questions. Oh, and now a word from our moderator. Sure.
Two announcements. One, we are recording this session, so if you have questions for Tom, please use the microphones. And also, Tom's slides will be available on the USENIX website on the program bit. Just sort of follow down the proceedings, and you'll find the slides.
Hey, Tom. First question,
you said, state your name and where you're from.
Matthew Barr. I actually typically work with the really small clients, mm-hmm. as opposed to what I think you're calling the small. How many sysadmins were working for your team?
I had one part-timer in Maryland and two full-time people in London.
In London, so okay. And then you in New Jersey?
And I was in New Jersey.
Okay. How many user typically basis?
So 100 users.
Okay.
So which is a pretty decent ratio, but.
Right, actually, yeah. Okay. So just, a lot of
actually,
things
let
we're
me
seeing.
Just back up. So one of, sorry to interrupt, but one of the ideas I had during all of this was, boy, if someone could make a box that just did those five apps, remote control isn't really, the four apps, that would be a great little, like, sysadmin in a box kind of thing, that every little, what most of these small sites, the very small sites, often they have, Joe the computer guy who's, or maybe, Matthew the computer guy who stops by once a week, virus scans everything and does backups and answers any questions they might have. There's a million of those guys out there, and I say guys because usually a guy, except Lorette Cheswick. and people like Lorette and computer guys, would love a little appliance like this. Anyway,
just
now
curious.
You can ask your question.
Well, I just asked, just trying to get an idea of how small the client was and such. Mm-hmm. But also, based on the slide, out of curiosity, what were you guys using for backups?
Other than the FireWire drives?
Well, even with the FireWire drives.
With the FireWire drives, it was either rsync or retrospect. We've migrated, actually, to Brew app. Yes, please state your name and your organization.
It's Carson Gaspar. I'm with Goldman Sachs at the moment. But one thing I've helped out a lot of my other friends who are smaller sites, if you look hard enough, you can get good, relatively inexpensive low-end boxes for routers and little firewalls that actually have HA.
That have what?
High availability, that have failover.
That have failover.
So, for instance, like NetScreen makes a little teeny NS5 box that's, I think the HA version might be $900 or whatever. But it's a lot more than the $150 Linksys, but it's not in the, tens of thousands of dollars of unapproachable, stuff.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
And you can
there
find
are
a lot of things like that.
Customers like Linksys are addressing the very small market with a box that can do failover.
And it's a huge win, and it's a relatively small expenditure, and it just has made people so ecstatic that they have two internet connections. They don't go down anymore, and
mm-hmm. it turns out that Linksys has one now that actually does that.
Oh, okay, that's and Linksys has one now.
$250 or $300 or so.
Okay. Questions are free. Oh, here we come.
This is maybe less a question and more a suggestion, but since you've recently solved this problem, I haven't seen anything like this on the web, But I think it would be a great project if someone sat down and came up with a sort of a list of cases of various types of office and said, you can build this office for X dollars. So for instance, let's just say you're like, you know, some IT guy who's starting out and you've got a company with 100 people. Now, most of us in this room probably have a good idea about what we could get, but there are a lot of people who don't know. And I think that you could actually sort of enforce a little more efficiency in the sort of IT hardware marketplace. If somebody says, boy, I can build an office for 100 people with, you know, $10,000 or this amount of money, and then just have a giant list of sort of vendor recommendations. Hmm. I'm not sure if anybody's up for doing that project, but I think it would be a good idea.
That would be a neat wiki kind of thing. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And actually, that reminds me the... Trace, do you please state your name and organization?
I'm Tom Limoncelli, and I'm a system administrator.
I don't believe you. I don't believe that you're a system administrator. You work for that book company, right?
Yeah. We sell music and stuff, too, actually. I'm Trey Harris. I'm at Amazon. Tangential, but if you'll take a tangential question. So yours is not the first nor even the fifth story I've heard of someone entering a very broken organization and repairing it enough to get shipped to Bangalore. And so my question is our job going to be over time repairing organizations enough to ship them to Bangalore?
Oh, do you want to get me started on that? Yes? Okay. You know, everyone knows that if you're going to automate something, first you need to document, right? Because you have to know what you're going to be, you know, what's going to be happening before you can automate it. And I am noticing this pattern of, step one is stabilize and automate. You know, document your processes. That, you know, every time we get an invoice, you stamp it, you do this, you do that. Because a lot of companies don't, you know, everything's very catch as catch can. So then they document it, and then when they go to automate it, they say, well, we have two options. We can automate it or we can offshore it. And they couldn't offshore it before things were documented, which makes me wonder if this whole ISO 9000 thing was just a conspiracy to help the offshore people. But I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I could do my user group talk that I'm doing right now. Just kidding. Okay.
Seriously, if there are no more questions, we're done. Thank you very much, Tom.
Well, thank you very much.